This is the Taxi Link, brought to you by the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers. I'm Pete Tucker with thefightback.org. In New York City, outgoing Mayor Michael Bloomberg reportedly cursed out a taxi magnate in a private club, telling him that upon leaving office in January, he would destroy your bleeping industry. The target of Bloomberg's alleged verbal assault was the CEO of Taxi Club Management, Gene Friedman, who owns some 700 taxi medallions, roughly 5% of New York City's total. Friedman successfully led an effort to overturn Bloomberg's planned Taxi of Tomorrow, which would have replaced nearly the entire New York City taxi fleet with specially designed, handicap-accessible SUVs made by Nissan. The day before the alleged incident, New York State Supreme Court sided with Friedman and blocked Bloomberg's Taxi of Tomorrow from moving forward, apparently infuriating the mayor. Regarding the now-blocked Taxi of Tomorrow, here's a video report by Nissan on their specially designed cab.
Nissan now has a new version of its NV200 taxi that's wheelchair accessible. The car company won a bid to redesign New York City's taxis in 2011. They've been perfecting the final design with all the key stakeholders, including the New York Taxi and Limousine Commission, ever since. This latest wheelchair-accessible NV200 New York taxi debuted at the New York International Auto Show this week.
The ability to make sure that we can produce cars that basically appeal to everyone, including those people needing the accessibility option, is an important part of our whole ethos.
That was a video report from Nissan. The company won the right to provide New York City with a new fleet of cabs dubbed the Taxi of Tomorrow. The New York State Supreme Court, however, recently ruled that the city can't move forward with its planned new fleet. In D.C., a bike commuter videotaped a taxi making a U-turn on Pennsylvania Avenue. The biker, Bill Walsh, is a copy editor at the Washington Post. His video has gone viral, generating more than 1 million views on YouTube. The 18-second video ends with the taxi being pulled over by the FBI police.
Illegal! Illegal!
We'll link to the video at thefightback.org. Bill Walsh is calling for a physical barrier to be placed between cyclists and cars on Pennsylvania Avenue, but he fears that a biker may have to be injured or killed before that happens. News Channel 8 followed up the story with this piece.
In other news tonight, it's been nearly 6 months since the D.C. government made it illegal for drivers to make U-turns across the bike lanes on Pennsylvania Avenue. MPD says officers...
No, we can continue.
Viral video of a near miss between a bike and a car shows the need for a safety barrier.
Illegal! Illegal!
Commuting to work last week, cyclist Bill Walsh nearly collided with a car making an illegal U-turn across the Pennsylvania Avenue bike lanes. Thrilled to see the driver pulled over and the law enforced, this video has gone viral among biking enthusiasts.
I ride this almost every day, and it's rare that I do not see an illegal U-turn through the lane.
Cyclists say it happens all too often.
You had any close calls?
Yeah, definitely. I slammed on my brakes. I came this close to hitting him.
A few accused cab drivers of being the worst offenders.
They don't put the light to send the signal. They just make like a left. It's a surprise for you.
But many drivers claim ignorance.
That was an illegal U-turn.
Some seem to think the no U-turn signs only apply to intersections where they're posted.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. I mean, some public education would be helpful.
In addition to others, MPD says its unit dedicated to enforcing this law has so far this year issued more than 100 citations with a fine of $100.
That was part of News Channel 8's story on and video of a D.C. taxi cab driver making a U-turn on Pennsylvania Avenue and getting pulled over by an FBI police vehicle. Meanwhile, in Montgomery County, police arrested an armed robbery suspect in the back of a taxi on May 16th. The suspect is accused of holding up a Radio Shack on Georgia Ave and then hailing a cab one block away, according to a press release from the Montgomery County Police Department. After responding to the call and seeing an individual matching the description enter the taxi, the officer pulled over the cab and arrested the suspect. Police said they found money, property, and a silver lighter shaped like a handgun on the suspect. This is the Taxi Link, brought to you by the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers. You can catch the Taxi Link each Saturday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here at WST 1120 a.m. And you can find all the past shows online at thefightback.org, thefightback.org, so drivers can go there on their smartphone at home and listen to the past shows. I'm Pete Tucker with The Fight Back, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tony Norman, chairman of DC Advisory Neighborhood Commission 1B,
which includes parts of U Street, 9th Street, and Georgia Avenue. Welcome, Tony Norman.
Glad to be here.
Well, you had an interesting exchange with DC Taxi Chair Ron Linton yesterday. We played just a few moments of it, a few seconds of it in the introduction, and we'll be turning to the whole thing shortly. It took place directly following a less than 5 minute long meeting of the DC Taxi Cab Commission. The whole thing was less than 5 minutes, which has to be some sort of record. And later in the program, we'll discuss the likely reason behind the brevity of the meeting, and it's somewhat suspect. But first, Tony, I was wondering if you could touch on your exchange with Linton and offer any opening thoughts you may have.
Well, the disturbing thing, and I was attending the hearing, or got there a little bit by the time we got there, was over. But at the end of the hearing, there was a discussion and asking the chairman some questions. And I was disturbed as the conversation went on about suspending taxicab drivers. And Linton was trying to justify that drivers are suspended first, and then there's a hearing and a determination of the driver whether or not he's guilty or innocent of whatever the violation is. But the problem with that process is you're depriving the driver of his livelihood. That's how he makes a living. So he's suspended for who knows how long. The suspension is first. So there's a presumption of guilt. And the driver is being punished before he's even declared innocent. So who knows how long they could have a hearing that could drag on for a month before a final determination is made, or who knows how longer. During that time period, the driver is suspended, no matter, or even if they postpone the hearing, the driver is suspended. So there's a suspension first, and then there's a hearing and a determination. So he's trying to justify this process, and that's a very disturbing process of punishing drivers first before a determination is made. And he's trying to say that's how the legal system is. But that's not how the legal system is.
I wanted to turn to an interview I did with DC Taxi Chair Ron Linton after yesterday's less than 5 minute long commission meeting. I began by asking Linton about the commission's policy of suspending a driver pre any conviction, just as Tony Norman was pointing out. And 1 minute into the audio clip, you'll hear that Tony joins the conversation.
The rule is that when a driver is arrested for a misdemeanor or felony offense, and it's taken to U.S. attorney and he's scheduled for trial, then he is suspended until disposition of the case before the court.
And that's standard operating procedure. Before any conviction, the driver's license will be suspended.
That's correct.
Do you have any concerns about punishing a driver before anything has been proven in a court of law?
We're not punishing the driver. That's tantamount to saying that the driver has and this is not a non-battery situation. In a battery situation, now, if he's arrested for something that doesn't involve the passenger or something like that, or it's fraud or some of that nature, then the chances are we're not going to suspend him. In a battery situation, yes, we're going to suspend him.
And again, this is pre any conviction, so nothing's been established.
Right. If he doesn't get convicted, he gets his license back and goes on.
But the driver's being penalized. He can't make a living while he's suspended. Aren't you punishing him in advance?
What do I do if that same driver beats up somebody else a week later?
You just assume he beats someone up. What if he's an innocent driver?
I don't know. Yeah, but what do I do if he does? You know, it's the same thing that you all tell me about the insurance, that why do you have to have a notice of infraction when you don't have your insurance card, when it's easy to call the office and they'll tell you I have the insurance? Yes, but you drive off and you have an accident and it turns out that the office made a mistake. The District Cumbly is liable for your accident.
But you're depriving a driver of his livelihood. That's a due process without even a trial. You've convicted him. He can't make
a
living.
It's a hearing.
Who knows how long before a hearing happens and he can't make
a living. You're wrong. You don't know your own process. He has no suspension without entitlement to a hearing in 3 days. He gets a hearing before OAH in 3 days.
And if that doesn't happen, if they suspend
him? No, it has to happen. It has to happen or the suspension has to be lifted. You got to know your own process.
But if
you've got to learn what's in the
title. Who reimburses him for that money he loses as a driver?
Days?
Yes. Even if it's 3 days. If he's found innocent, how does he get that money back?
But no,
and that happens to everybody in the court system.
It doesn't happen to everybody in the court system.
Sure it does. The rich.
They put you in jail.
If they can set bail, you go before the court and your trial's not for 6 months, and they say, okay, you're set bail or you go to jail.
But you can sue the person who is wrongfully arrested.
I'm not going to sit here and argue. See, that's what you people do all the time. You got a lousy system out there. I'm trying to help you save it. You need to help yourselves as well.
We're trying to help ourselves.
You're trying to defend somebody who's charged.
But you're depriving a person of his livelihood before even found innocent or guilty.
But the point about reimbursement, I think, is a fair one. Now, you mentioned the 3 days, but also if a person is suspended without the conviction, then it's the whole time before they're convicted, right? That could be not just 3 days. That could be a period of weeks or longer, possibly, yeah?
I have no idea. I'm not. That's in the judicial system. That's between the individual and his lawyer and the courts.
And then through that whole time, though, that driver is suspended and can't make a living.
That's correct. Well, he can make a living and do something else, but he can't drive his vehicle.
That's against the Constitution. You've taken away his livelihood.
Then take us to court.
Probably will.
Okay.
They will.
We'll see you in court.
Then take us to court. That was D.C. Taxi Chair Ron Linton after Friday's less than 5 minute long commission meeting. I questioned him along with Tony Norman. There are many things to respond to here, Tony, but maybe you can begin with Linton's assertion that when he suspends a driver, one who hasn't been convicted of anything, Lynn isn't preventing him from making a living because, quote, he could do something else.
Yes. How many drivers, what else can they do in that time period that they've been suspended? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they can sit on a taxicab commission and be paid. I don't know what they can do in that time period. That's what they do for a living. They're taxicab drivers. So it shows you the callous, flippant behavior that he is, that the drivers are just presumed to be guilty. It's like they're just a second-class citizen. They're presumed to be guilty to suspend them. And the troubling thing about Linton's explanation, first of all, he contradicts himself. First of all, he says there is no suspension until there's a hearing, which is not true. And then he says, because in the instant where these particular drivers and incident did happen, they are suspended first and they still have yet to have a hearing. So basically, they're going to be suspended before there's a hearing. And that's a very troubling thing. And he seems to think that that's okay because that's the way our judicial system is. But I think he's very wrong about it. That's not how our judicial system is. In our judicial system, there is a determination made if a person, even if he is arrested on a criminal issue, he goes before an arraignment, and there's a determination made before a person is locked up or kept whether that person is a danger to society or to himself. And then they either set a bail or let him free or hold him. But there is a determination made by a judge quickly. But in this instance, there is no determination. The driver is suspended first. He is punished. And for whatever reason, a bureaucratic delay, a hearing could stretch on. That driver cannot make a living. That's a constitutional due process issue. And you heard Linton say himself, take me to court. I think drivers need to seriously look into that. This is a very serious violation.
He says we're not punishing the driver.
Yes, the driver, I mean, how many people, what if we suspended him for his callous behavior as chairman of the commission? He gets paid over $130,000 a year. Why don't we just suspend you until we determine whether or not your behavior is callous or reckless? How well can you survive without your pay during that suspension time period?
And then after driver, so a driver suspended, and then it turns out the driver did nothing wrong, and they're not convicted, they're let go, and then, as you're saying, there could be a period of quite a long time, but there's no restitution available as far as I can see.
That's right. There's no fund they're going to provide. What if you're innocent? What court does that driver go back not only to get his reputation back, but to get the funds back that he's lost during that time he was suspended? There is nowhere to do that. And he says that's the way our legal system is. And that's just too bad. That's not the situation. So that's why the taxicab driver should not tolerate the situation that's going on here. This is a very callous, disrespectful behavior, and it's just consistent with the way this commission treat taxicab drivers. You are presumed to be guilty. He said if this is a battery-type situation. What if it's a self-defense situation? That means if the cab driver is defending himself, they automatically take the side of the other person that the cab driver is battering the taxicab driver, and therefore he is suspended, and he loses his livelihood. This is clearly an example of a deprivation of the particular person of his rights and his livelihood without due process or without a fair hearing.
I wanted to turn to Friday's meeting, which is one of the more curious ones the commission has held, which is saying something. The meeting literally lasted less than 5 minutes and appears to have been called for the sole purpose of addressing the concerns of one company, Uber, the largely unregulated sedan service. Now, DC Taxi Chair Ron Linton contends that the commission is a regulatory body and doesn't act on the concerns of any one company. Speaking to the Washington Post, Linton said, as regulators, we don't negotiate with individual parties when we're dealing with regulations that affect multiple parties. But the commission's actions and its words don't appear to match up. This past week, Uber rallied its members to oppose the recent changes brought about as a result of the commission's approval of the modern taxi meter system. In particular, Uber was concerned about having to contract with the payment service provider, or PSP, which is now required of all dispatch services as well as of all taxicab drivers. In a letter to the Taxi Commission, Uber complained that the requirement to partner with a PSP is not practical for a software company like Uber. As far as we can tell, the new regulations require us to shut down Uber Taxi, said Uber CEO Travis Kalanick. The commission appears to have taken Uber's concerns much more seriously than it does taxi drivers. The Washington Post's Mike DeBonis obtained an interesting email sent from D.C. City Administrator Alan Liu's office to Uber's D.C. lobbyists. The email from Liu's senior counsel, Barry Creesworth, says, there is merit to Uber's concern, and officials, including taxi chair Ron Linton, are interested in working things out with the company. Creesworth writes, quote, we're eager to continue conversations on this issue and reach a solution that works for everyone. He continues, quote, as Ron Linton has previously stated, he is prepared to call a special meeting of the commission for May 24th in order to vote on the changes on an emergency basis, so the quicker we can get these issues resolved, the better. The district values innovation Uber and companies like it have brought to district sedan and taxi service, and the great service is provided to district residents, end quote. That, again, is from an email obtained by the Washington Post. It's from City Administrator Alan Liu's office to Uber, and openly says that Linton is prepared to call a special meeting to address Uber's concerns on Friday, and indeed, an incredibly brief special meeting the commission did take place yesterday. Tony Norman, your response.
Yes, it shows you the access and the treatment of Uber as you see how they treat taxicab drivers. It shows you the special preference behavior that Uber is getting. This special meeting that lasted less than 5 or 10 minutes just to give them an exception in the law so that they can operate within the new law. It shows you just how the treatment and the influence that Uber has over the taxicab commission as well as the city council. And this, again, is something that needs to be looked into from a legal perspective.
The special meeting, which appears to have been for the purpose of addressing Uber's concerns and lasted 5 minutes, which has to be some sort of record, the whole thing took place without mentioning Uber by name. Chairman Linton said the commission was gathering on an emergency basis in order to clarify certain legal and technical issues.
The purpose of the emergency regulations is to clarify certain legal and technical issues that our lawyers determined upon a review of the way that the regulation, which was adopted on May 8th, was written. And this purpose is to clarify those several items, ensuring that it's clearly understood that a PSP will not have the ability to deny an owner's request for any digital service if the owner so requests.
That was Taxi Chair Ron Linton explaining why the commission was gathering on an emergency basis. Tony Norman?
Yes. Once again, he doesn't really go into the substance of what that change is and how it affects. I mean, like, as you mentioned, he doesn't even mention Uber, that this is primarily an adjustment or a technicality to benefit or correction for Uber. And that's something that should be stated on the record since it's a public hearing as to what and the impact of what this new technical change, whereas it's more of a substantive change rather than a technical change, actually. By the mere fact that the taxicab commission is meeting on it, it's more than just a technical change. That means a whole commission has to legally meet and take a vote on it. If it was just a technical change, it's something that the staff could do.
I've been trying to grasp, as you said, we showed up, we were rushing from one thing. Actually, we were on, as we mentioned here last week on this program, we were pitching for WPFW, another station, 89.3 FM, Pacifica Radio, which is non-corporate, non-commercial. And that ended at 10. We rushed over to the Taxicab Commission. It was done by the time we got there. As we said, a record fast meeting. But in that short meeting, something very substantive took place. And it, as you're saying, it was not fully explained. I'm still trying to grasp exactly what took place, but as I understand it, that on May 8th, you had the passage at the Taxi Cab Commission of this modern taxi meter system, which requires all drivers to get this modern taxi meter system in their car and team up with a payment service provider in order to process credit card fees. And that payment service provider will then transmit fees to the Taxi Cab Commission and so forth. And my understanding is that as a result of Friday's emergency meeting, Uber essentially has carved out an exception where it doesn't necessarily have to partner with the PSP the way that was previously the rule for everyone else. So I'm still trying to grasp exactly what took place, but it seems that more than 5 minutes may have been appropriate for something that, as you're saying, it may have been more substantive than technical, these changes that were made. And if you look at the emails that the Washington Post obtained, there's a lot of backstory here that we weren't getting, that we get some sense of thanks to these emails, but there's a lot more at play here than just a quick 5 minutes and done type of meeting.
I would dare say that many of the commissioners that were present would not even really know what that was all about or the implications of those changes, because some commissioners have expressed that they get these things just on the day of the hearing sitting on the dais. So I doubt very seriously if even the commissioners themselves understood the impact of what they were doing. Once again, clearly it was a substantive change by the mere fact that they had a public meeting, and how it addressed drivers or the companies, nobody really knows the impact of that, but those who lobbied for that. And clearly it was something that for the advantage of Uber. And as a matter of public record, we should know what involvement, what emails, what letters went back and forth between the chairman of the Taxi App Commission and Uber that generated this sort of modification that affects only one company. That's something that needs to be followed up on, or do a freedom, a FOIA, a freedom information request, because that's public information. But once again, that is clearly a substantive change, not a technical change, by the fact that the commission had to take a vote in a public hearing to do that.
And they did it on an emergency basis. And I should point out, this is not the first time that you've seen things really changed about, if indeed that's what took place for Uber. I mean, we've seen that they were allowed, the D.C. Council stepped in to allow them to operate largely without any regulation as far as what they can charge, you know, as far as being able to pick up people. It's really an extraordinary amount of influence that this company has had. And they raise concerns and they get, you know, emails back from the city administrator's office. It appears to have gotten a hearing on their concerns. If drivers raise these same concerns, you don't get the same response from the district, certainly not from the Taxi Cab Commission.
I mean, we're seeing time and time again the double standard of how the commission and the chairman treats drivers and how they treat companies and the owners of company. It is clearly a major difference. They go out of their way to even adjust the laws to benefit companies like Uber, and yet they presume that taxi cab drivers are the problem. If you listen to the exchange he had with me, he says, that's the trouble with you people, that you people, meaning foreigners, people from outside, you don't understand what's going on with this industry, and they just presume that the driver is wrong, the drivers are second-class citizens, and the drivers are basically criminals, therefore they legislate that way. And the companies, they need adjustments, they need special advantages, and they adjust themselves that way.
I just wanted to go back to that clip one more time because it's just so extraordinary. It's just language you don't hear. This is Chairman Litton addressing Tony as well as some others, and I began by interviewing him after yesterday's very brief Taxi Cab Commission meeting.
I'm not going to sit here and argue. See, that's what you people do all the time. You got a lousy system out there. I'm trying to help you save it. You need to help yourselves as well.
We're trying to help ourselves.
You're trying to defend somebody who's charged.
But you're depriving a person of his livelihood before even found innocent or guilty.
So that, again, was Chairman Litton, Tony Norman.
And one other thing, if you listen carefully to what he says you're trying to defend a driver that's been suspended. He's already made up his mind about that driver. There hasn't even been a hearing yet. And this is the chairman of the Taxi Cab Commission saying, you're trying to defend this. Yes, we're trying to defend this driver. He needs a defense to see what's going on and what didn't happen, whether or not he's guilty or innocent. But you listen carefully to his comments. The commission is going to be making a ruling on this particular driver that they suspended his life. He's already presumed that this driver is guilty of whatever he's charged with.
questions whether it can be a fair and objective hearing.
Yes. He said, you're just here trying to defend this driver. Yes, we are here trying to defend the driver. The fact that he has a due process, a right to be heard, and before you take away his livelihood, a way of making a living, he ought to at least have a fair hearing and trial and be offered, be given an opportunity to present evidence and look at his accusers and then make a ruling on that. And before you take away his ability to make a living, you should have an open and fair hearing on that and not suspend him first.
And I think that goes before the Office of Administrative Hearings. And what Chairman Linton laid out was that every driver gets that initial hearing before the Office of Administrative Hearings within 3 days. But that's not necessarily what drivers have reported. So if you're going through this process, if you're a driver and it's worked out as Chairman Linton says, or if you're a driver and it's worked out very differently than what Chairman Linton says, if you can get in touch with us so we can help to broadcast these stories, because it's one thing to talk about the issues, and we've had drivers, you know, tell us the story, but it's very helpful to get drivers in their own voice come out and explain what's going on. Nothing has more power than that. And so I encourage drivers to get in touch with us, whether through the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers, which sponsors this show, or you can get my contact info at thefightback.org. Tony Armour, before we go to break, there's one other issue from headlines. I highlighted a issue that happened in Montgomery County in Silver Spring. Apparently someone is accused of robbing a Radio Shack, and they get into a taxi cab. And the reason I wanted to play that was because that taxi cab driver did his job, which is to pick up anyone and everyone. And there's been so much talk about taxi cab drivers and how terrible they are, and they don't pick up, and these sting operations, which I think are really just about, you know, getting an Emmy Award for certain individuals. But I just wanted to highlight that, because that's what taxi cab drivers do on a daily basis, but they just don't get credit. They put people who they do not know inches behind their head time and again. That's public service, but rarely is it the credit given for that.
Yes, they just, the example of that is showing that they just pick up indiscriminately anyone, which is what they're supposed to do, although sometimes some drivers use a little caution. But they don't give them credit for doing that. They just focus on the drivers that may not pick up a particular race or a particular person. And it shows you that they start off, the media start off with a predisposition of how they're going to treat the taxi cab drivers.
This is the Taxi Link, broadcasting here on WST 1120 AM and brought to you by the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers. We're going to go to a short music break, and when we return, we'll be joined by Fisahe Tesfaye and another driver leader at National Harbor in Prince George's County, where drivers say they're being pushed out. Stay tuned.
Born in a troubled city, in rock and roll USA, in the shadow of the tallest building, I vowed I would break away. Listen to the Sunday actors, but all they would ever say, that you can't get away from it. No, you can't get away. No, you can't get away from it. No, you can't get away. School down the city sidewalks, coldness at every turn. Knew I had to find the exits, I never ever would return. Scoffed at the prophet's omens that said I would live to learn, that you can't get away from it. No, you can't get away. No, you can't get away from it. No, you can't get away.
This is the Taxi Link, brought to you by the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers. I'm Pete Tucker with thefightback.org, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tony Norman. And I wanted to just make a couple announcements. One is that the conversation continues for those who speak Amharic directly following this program beginning at 8:30 p.m. There's a phone conference the Small Business Association puts on, and you can. I'm going to give out the number twice and the code. So, and then give out another number. So go ahead and get your pens ready. And the number again, the phone conference takes place in Amharic, and the number to join that conversation is 712-432-3100, and the code is 140465. And just like this radio program, it's critical that drivers get a chance to get the information that they need about the industry that provides for their families and what the threats are to that. And the phone conference in Amharic is critical toward getting that out. Again, that number is 712-432-3100, and the code is 140465. And that takes place beginning at 8:30 p.m. And I want to let D.C. drivers know there's a public hearing coming up on Wednesday, May 29th at 10 a.m., at 441 4th Street Northwest on the uniform taxi color and design. I know for many drivers that's not a big issue, but for some drivers who are, whether it be Capital Cab or Yellow Cab or Diamond or some of the cabs that have a long history with their colors, that is a big deal. And that's coming up Wednesday, and you can get information at the DC Taxi Commission website, and we'll post information as well at the fightback.org. And also, if there are drivers who are interested in receiving a text message directly before the show, at the end of the show, we'll give out a number where you can call, because we want to help try and get the message out to drivers that they can, you know, I think a lot of drivers forget Saturday evening to tune in. So we want to help get a text message chain going. So if you're interested in doing that, I'll give the number out now twice. You can call right now. We'll get your information, and then an hour before the show, we'll send you a text next week, and you can send it out to 10 or 20 drivers, and we can help spread awareness so drivers know to tune in. And, of course, drivers can catch all of the past shows at thefightback.org. So if you're interested in being part of the Taxi Links text team, well, give a call to 703 here in the studio to 703-534-9878. Again, to be part of the Taxi Links text team, call 703-534-9878 so we can get word out about the show. We now turn to a struggle taking place just over the district line in Prince George's County at a luxury resort and mini city on the Potomac River. Drivers, including Fisaha Tesfai and Emmanuel Gebriwol, who join us in studio, are worried that a change in parking policies is part of a large effort to force them out of National Harbor in order to make way for Veolia, the French multinational transportation company. Drivers' fears appear to be well-founded. While National Harbor declined to respond to the TaxiLink's requests for comment, Gaylord National, the National Harbor's largest hotel, did provide a written statement last week which said that the hotel will be expanding its contract with Veolia beginning in June. Joining us to talk more about the situation at National Harbor are taxi leaders Fisaha Tesfai and Emmanuel Gebriwol. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks.
I wanted to begin, maybe, Fisaha, if you can give an overview of what National Harbor is and what will be the impact on not just drivers at National Harbor, but drivers throughout Prince George's County, if the jobs at National Harbor, the hotel guests and so on, if those are not accessible by taxi cab drivers, but are instead given to Veolia, this French transportation giant, as drivers fear.
Okay, just to describe how looks the National Harbor around there. There is almost like six big hotels around the National Harbor, and for PG taxi drivers, it means a lot because it gives a job opportunity almost over 75 drivers around in that area. So if the driver can get a job in that area, that means all those drivers are going to push back out to the rest of the Prince George community. That means it's going to create another job stress. And it's not just easy, you can see it, because it gives more opportunity for more driver. Even this National Harbor is not going to stop in this condition, because there is a big construction going on in that area, like big shopping center outlet, and there's big casinos coming in that area. So more, when they give opportunity to a cab driver in that area, the more
cab driver from different area come and serve that community, that area. So it means very, it means a lot for all of the drivers in our community in Prince George County.
And if drivers are cut off from that, I mean, right now, is it easy to survive as a taxi cab driver as it is right now?
No, not really. It's very hard even to make it right now because they just stressing us to get out from that area. They're using different kind of tactic to kick us out from that area. And it's too hard to make a living in the Prince George County.
One of the tactics that drivers fear is being used is the parking garage that's directly across from the Gaylord, from Gaylord National. That's the largest hotel. What are there, six hotels at National Harbor?
Yeah, that's right.
And as you're saying, a shopping center is coming online, a casino in the years ahead. So it's already a massive, I think, $2 billion project.
Which, that's right.
Which received a lot of public money as well as far as the roads and whatnot. But across from the Gaylord National on the third floor is where taxicab drivers park. Now, the black cars park right in front of the hotel. But the taxicabs park across the street on the third floor of a garage, at least until June 1st. Now, we reached out to National Harbor and the Peterson Company, which runs National Harbor, to try and get clarification about are, in fact, drivers being essentially kicked out of the garage. Now, you can explain this, Emmanuel, but drivers pay $60 a month. A couple months ago, it was just $30 a month. Now, $60 a month in order to park at the garage, as opposed to paying an hourly rate, which would just be unaffordable to drivers. But talk about the garage, talk about the significance of June 1st and what you understand may come down.
Thank you for the opportunity. For June 1st, as well, they say, Veolia, they have their own transportation to run a service like a taxi around the National Harbor. After June 1st, maybe none of taxi driver around PG County, we don't have a job to pick from the whole National Harbor area. Now, still, we have a hard time to make a living because we already pay $60 on that parking space every month. Sometimes we don't have a job for a whole day. We just stay there because the job is taken by other transportation. Maybe after the end of this month, none of us, we can make no living around there. That means we get pushed out from the National Harbor area.
And talk about, so I was at National Harbor for a protest on a separate issue, on this issue of fracking on Wednesday. And that was only the second time I visited, the first time because I heard about what you guys were going through. And as we were there, a wheelchair had apparently been struck by a taxi cab. And I mentioned this to you, Fissaha, and you pointed out that drivers get whistled at from the Gaylord Hotel, and they're up on the third floor of the parking garage. They have got to really book to get to the front door of that hotel. And if they don't get there quickly enough, what happens?
Well, it's going to be given for other driver. Let's say there's a black car standing at the front door. They're going to give it for them. Or if there's any other driver, out of county driver, they're going to give them right away if the taxi driver didn't respond quick enough for them. They whistle you like three times or four times. If any cab driver didn't respond on that time, the job's going to be gone.
And the black cars are waiting right out in front?
Right in the front door.
As opposed to the cabs, which are across the street on the third floor of a garage?
Yeah, the cab driver, they have to come from the third floor and cross two street to get the job. But the black car, they're standing right in front of the Gaylord Hotel, and they choose the job, which job they want. And after that we get a job. If they don't like it, for example, to give you an example, sometimes the black car, they don't take a credit card or short fare. That and that time, they call a cab. So we got to come from the third floor to get that job. Between that gap, the time limit, if we didn't respond enough, quick enough, somebody's going to take that job. Because of that, most of our drivers, they get in a lot of trouble. Like you mentioned it, they have an accident with the pedestrian and wheelchairs, handicapped man.
And
I wanted to read a written statement that provided to the Taxi Link by Gaylord National. I mean, I should say that, so right now the situation is imperfect as it is, but coming June 1st, although nothing, again, we didn't get a response from National Harbor, but what drivers have heard is that you won't even be allowed to pay a monthly fee to park in the garage. Can you take a moment to talk about what will be the impact of that? What does that mean? Is that just, you can't park in a garage? It doesn't seem like a big deal to the average person. But for a driver trying to access the guests at National Harbor, that is, in fact, a big deal. Can you explain why it's important?
Yes. When they take our monthly parking card from the parking place, that means we have to park hourly like regular customers, like visitors. That means I just stay there for 2 hours. I have to pay $6 only just to park for 2 hours. Maybe I'll get a job. The job will be $12. That means I'll take only $6 from that fare. I wait like 2-3 hours in the fare. Sometimes we just wait 3-5 hours. There is no job. We will leave. That means after the end of the month, we just pay for nothing. We just pay $10-$15 for the whole day to park on there, and we don't have no job. We just go home. That means it will affect a lot of people by the end of the month.
Enough to provide for a family?
Exactly. We used to make a good living. We used to be. Nowadays, it's so hard. Sometimes we stay there 10-15 hours a day to make a living for our family.
As I said, in a written statement provided to the Taxi Link, Gaylord National said it didn't own or operate the garage across the street, which is owned by the Peterson Company, and they own they run National Harbor. And Gaylord National also said it doesn't believe the taxi drivers are being evicted. Your response?
Actually, nobody just give out a statement like we guarantee to park on there or not, because the same thing they do when they just raise the money from $30 to $60, they just post a paper and they just raise the money before they ask us any opinion and how it will affect our job.
Talk about that. The fares were $30 a month until a couple months ago, and they suddenly jumped, doubled?
They jumped to a double. That means $60 for each driver every month.
I also wanted to talk about the issue of Veolia, and this is a major French multinational transportation company. In response to the Taxi Link's question about a contract with Veolia, Gaylord National responded, unfortunately, National Harbor has yet to. And Gaylord National wrote, quote, I'm going to quote it at length here, and I want to get your responses. Beginning in June, Veolia Transportation, Gaylord National's transportation vendor, will enhance their services to offer express transport, a new eco-friendly hybrid vehicle service that will serve as a lower-cost alternative to Veolia's luxury black sedan car service. Since opening 5 years ago, our guests have expressed their desires for high-quality personal transportation service with clean vehicles, courteous and knowledgeable drivers, and reasonable flat rate fares to the area's top destinations. Express Transport is simply a direct response to this customer feedback and will be an expansion of Veolia's existing contracted sedan transportation services. Finishing up, moving forward, our guests will still have the option of choosing whichever transportation service they wish to utilize, whether it be a luxury black sedan car service, an economical private car service such as Express Transport, a group shuttle, or a traditional taxi operator. This has always been the policy since we opened in 2008, and will continue in the future. That, again, from a written statement provided to the Taxi Link by Gaylord National. But I wanted to get your responses specifically to this sentence. Since opening 5 years ago, our guests have expressed their desires for high-quality personal transportation service with clean vehicles, courteous and knowledgeable drivers. I think in a backhanded way, they may be saying that Prince George's County taxi cab drivers don't fit that category. Fissar, or do you have a response?
Yeah, I'll answer for that question.
Emmanuel.
First, when they start building, just building the National Harbor, we are the one we used to provide a transportation service for each and every workers they just build in the National Harbor. That means our partnership from National Harbor didn't start from 2008. It just started the first time when they start building that that complex. Once they start the complex, still until now for 5 years, continuously, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, taxi drivers, we serve in the place like we used to do all the time. I don't understand why they try to say we are not knowledgeable, we are not clean, we are not fit to serve in the customer on National Harbor. We used to do it for the past 5 years, and we don't have no problem and we don't have no issue when we're serving all the customers.
Tony Norman?
Yeah, I just want to say that this it is clearly, you can see anybody with common sense what's going on here. You have the hotel and the management of National Harbor and the garage. They're making it extremely difficult for the taxi cab driver to not just be there. They're doubling the parking fee, and they can't stand out in front because they'll either get waved away or get a ticket in front of the hotel. So they can't stand out there to get the ride. They can't park anywhere to get the ride. So the bottom line is they are encouraging the taxi cab drivers that we don't want you here, and we want these limousine services that probably the hotel and the management have contracted with. And so they probably even get a piece of the pie of the drivers or the contractor with the limousine services or the new services that they're bringing on. So it's clear, I think, with the taxi cab drivers in terms of getting organized out there, need to document some of this. Document with video cameras and television and cameras about what exactly is going on, and write letters to document this, because I think there might be some legal issues here also. Clearly, there are tying agreements with the hotel, the management, the parking garage, to squeeze out the independent or the taxi cab drivers in favor of the limousine, other services that they probably have an agreement with the hotel as well as the management of National Harbor.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know if National Harbor has an agreement with Veolia, not just Gaylord National, and we'll keep reaching out to them and hope to get some response. I wanted to read you a text message. Okay, go ahead, Faisal, you had a comment.
Yeah, I have a kind of question for the Gaylord management, because this taxi serving for the rest of the community, PG community, they are good enough. They been certified from the county, and this all the taxi driver being regulated by taxi cab commission for PG County Taxi Cab Commission. But I don't know what they're making this. It's a kind of question for them. We are good enough for PG County residents, citizens, and why they're making this kind of difference between citizens, you know. Those the guests coming in National Harbor, they use taxi. Even if you go Oregon, there's a PG taxi. They bring them from Oregon Airport to Gaylord Hotel, and they drop them off there. But when they go out from that county, why they using different kind of service? What's the reason is that? You see, because they come from Dallas, they use Washington Flyer, they are taxi. They come BWI, they use BWI taxi. Even the Reagan, they use the same taxi service. But those people, when they're trying to leave our county, why don't they use our service?
That's a very interesting point and an interesting question that you're raising. I mean, National Harbor is located in Prince George's County.
That's right.
The county, as well as the state of Maryland, provided a lot of tax dollars to make that project possible. And as you're saying, if the taxis, which serve the public of Prince George's County, everywhere else in the county, and it seems like National Harbor, maybe they don't think they're a part of Prince George's County. It's an interesting question that you raise.
Yeah, we need some answer for these questions.
And speaking of answers from questions, you have a meeting coming up with Gaylord National?
Yeah, we have an appointment to meet the Gaylord management on Tuesday, and we have some issue to discuss about it, and we have we already set the meeting, but some of the meeting is private to discuss with them.
Has that been easy to get a meeting with them?
It's not easy to get a meeting. It took us to see the general manager almost 4 years now for us to see him. This is the first meeting now I'm going to see him. Before him, we've been dealing from other person from the Gaylord, which is have no power to solve this problem. And it took us 4 years for this time, this long time. Hopefully, on coming Tuesday, they might going to give us some kind of solution to resolve this kind of issue on our taxi driver. Based on our.
But that's interesting. You've been there 4 years working at National Harbor, and this is the first time, and you've been serving the customers at National Harbor. This is the first time you're meeting the general managers coming Tuesday.
This is for me, because there was other people dealing with them too.
Mm-hmm.
Since I started working in National Harbor, but this is the first time I'm going to meet the general manager.
Emmanuel Gabriel, what do you hope comes out of Tuesday's meeting? What do you hope is the result?
For me, it will be a little bit confusion because we meet them a couple of times. Always when we meet them, they didn't give us the right answer. Maybe they'll say they'll meet us after 2 months or 3 months. They try to contact somebody for the county. I don't know, maybe this one will make them change their mind. You know, I'm just like 50-50, but we'll hope something will become good by Tuesday.
And I guess in some ways, like with the taxi, like we reached out to National Harbor, they have not responded, but Gaylord National has, and Gaylord National is meeting with you on Tuesday, although it hasn't been easy to get the meeting. But National Harbor, have you reached out to them?
Actually, we tried to talk to them almost the past 6 months. Every time they make a meeting with us, when we showed up like on time, sometimes 30 minutes early, we see the management people there, but they are not willing to meet with us. Hmm.
I wanted to read a text message I got as the show was happening from a DC driver, Michelle Chame, and he says, the experience of PG drivers should send a message to DC drivers. Watch what is going on behind the scene by the name of modernization. And I think there's concern that what you are going through in Prince George's County at National Harbor, which is going to affect drivers countywide, is also something drivers need to pay attention to. Big companies moving in like Veolia in a big way.
That's right. You know, this company is not going to affect only our job, you know, our life. You know, it's going to affect all the surrounding cab driver. Let's say in a day, 50 cab driver go take a job from PG County to DC, and the return 50 driver bring those people back again. You know, that means 100 job, and another job goes to Alexandria. The same people, they're gonna bring them back here. But these people, if they starting working, as we heard it, they're gonna, if they drop them, they're gonna pick them back. So they're gonna control everything.
I guess I want to get your final thoughts, but one more question before that, which is this new kind of in-between. It's not a luxury sedan car that they're trying to roll out at Gaylord National with Veolia. So is it a taxi? Can it pick up? It can't pick up members of the public, right? In order to do that, you'd have to, like yourselves, be a taxi. So this is just something, it's kind of this new universe that we're entering here.
Yeah, they say they're not a taxi, but they're operating like a taxi. You know, but they don't have any meter, but they're operating like a taxi. They're picking customer, they're dropping customer. You know,
but they're not picking up just members of the public off the street. That's what a taxi does, and you have to be registered, and there's strict background checks, I'm guessing, like in DC, and all the things you have to do, inspections. That's not this. They're different.
Yeah, they're not operating like that. They're not gonna pick up a customer from the street. But you know, let's say they pick a customer from Gaylord Hotel, and they're trying to drop in DC. As we heard it, they're going to pick that customer back again to bring him back to Gaylord Hotel. Mm. If the customer wants to ride back, they're going to pick him back and ride, give him a ride back to the Gaylord Hotel. That means they're going to cut a job from other driver too.
Well, Fisa Tesfai and Emmanuel Gebreweld, I want to get your final thoughts, if any, you have any final thoughts that you care to share. And we're going to continue to follow this here on the Taxi Link, and it looks like June is the month where the rubber meets the road, that at least Gaylord National is moving forward with the contract with Veolia, and it's unclear what the status is of drivers even being able to park at the garage across the street. But we're certainly going to continue to follow what's taking place there and look forward to staying in touch with you guys. But any final thoughts you care to share? And thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, Will. You just bring us here just to talk about our issue. I want to mention one thing. This message is for National Harbor and the Gaylord. The only purpose, all those taxi drivers, they showed up on there just to make a living. And we want them to treat like the same way, like a taxi driver, just around the area. We have a good reputation on the county. We make the county better. We are the one we just got robbed, killed every single day. That means we serve in our county like a proper way. We want to make sure we got treated the same way we used to treat before. And this message is for the Prince George County citizens. Those vehicles, when they just came on the business, they are not serving the people they live in on the Prince George County. They're serving only the people that just come on the area. That means this thing will affect all the county people. We got kicked out from that property. That means the people, they live around PG County and Alexandria and D.C., they don't have no transportation to leave their workplace to go home. That means this thing only not affecting the taxi driver, just affecting the citizen. They just working on National Harbor. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That's the voice of Emmanuel Gebre-Wold. Also joining us is Fissa Tesfai. And do you have any final thoughts you care to share? Well, I want to thank you guys so much for joining with us, and we will certainly continue to follow the situation. Again, two taxi leaders who are Prince George's County taxi cab drivers, and they drive and have for several years since National Harbor opened. They're at National Harbor, and they're worried that they're being pushed out for Veolia. Tony Norman, we have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to finish up with some taxi poetry we got from a New York workshop. But before that, I wanted to get any final thoughts that you care to share.
I would just recommend to the PG taxicab drivers, in addition to their meeting with the leaders at National Harbor and the hotel, that they also need to get involved, the county executive and the elected officials in PG County, to get involved with this. Since you're communicating a message to the citizens, that you all need to get them involved with that. That way you would get much more of a bargaining issue out of your elected officials to show them that this is something that the citizens and public officials need to take seriously, and to get a bit of a media attention on that also.
Okay, we have one more quick thing that we want to get mentioned here. So go ahead and you want to give a shout out to some of the organizations who have been supportive of your work?
Yes. First, we try to thanks for National Taxi Workers Alliance. They help us for a lot of stuff. The WNACP, that's on Prince George County. They just help us too much. The Taxi Link, the radio guys you listen now, and Aurora, she just helping out Prince George County to get independent taxi, and all the drivers on PG County. Thanks.
Thank you, Emmanuel Gebre-Wold. This is the Taxi Link, and we're going to finish up with a look at some taxi poetry coming out of New York. Last week at the Penn World Voices Festival in New York, or at the beginning of the month, rather, the three cabbies took part in a workshop entitled Watching the Meter, Poetry from the Taxi Drivers. Among the taxi poets who performed was Davidson Garrett, who read his piece, Just Another Shift.
Just another shift. Late wintry afternoon, shrouded by a temperamental gray sky, sleet pelts the sidewalks of Manhattan's Upper East Side. I'm snug behind the steering wheel of my yellow taxi, driving southerly down York Avenue, beginning my 12-hour shift, searching for my first fare. Pedestrians wrapped in thick coats scurry across intersections, anxious to arrive at their overpriced apartments. Nannies in plastic ponchos roll massive prams in front of the cab as I wait for red lights to blink back to green. Another urban day, ending with icy dusk descending. My 60-year-old body, tired and creaky from the previous night's work, I sip a hot cup of coffee, which perfumes the musty smell of the auto's interior. Depressed at the thought of the drudgery ahead, I switch to WQXR on the dashboard radio, and I am serenaded by a Bach violin sonata. Tiny pellets of hail pouncing on the hood accompany Johann Sebastian with natural counterpoint. It is rush hour, but no one is rushing to grab my cab. I drive past the Episcopal Church of the Epiphany, wishing an epiphany would manifest in my repetitive life. Same old back and forth each evening. I've become a burned-out automaton, yearning for the adventurous excitement of my youth, but understanding this is only the continuous folly of my mind. Luckily, before I get too down in the dumps with mental monologues. I spot a waving hand attached to a long arm between two parked vehicles. Hailing a taxi, I screech my brakes in front of a woman who resembles Fran Dresser, clad in a faded mink. Opening my right automatic window to illegally ask her destination, she inquires with a voice that sounds like fingernails on a chalkboard. Will you please take me and my mother to Queens? My mother's in a wheelchair. My heart sinks. Queens at rush hour. A cabbie's nightmare. Bumper-to-bumper traffic, and most likely a return without a fare. An empty back seat. I wince at this potential loss of income. However, being the so-called professional that I am, I grudgingly say yes. Putting the car in park, I pop open the battery-powered trunk to load the wheelchair. Finally, I emerge into February's blustery air, dressed in khakis and a checkered shirt. On the sidewalk, seated in a clunky wheelchair, swathed in a quilted blanket, an ancient-looking white woman sneers. Her face reeks of bitterness under gray hair, fizzled by drizzle. Glaring at me with contempt as I walk toward her, the middle-aged daughter stands on one side, smiling to assure this grim mother I'm there to assist. Her offspring clutches one of her frail arms as I lift the other. On the count of three, we hoist this bag of bones onto her wobbling feet. She shrieks like a character out of a Greek tragedy. You're hurting me! Step by step, off the half-foot curb, we move Hecuba into the right rear door of the taxi. We spin her around rump first. She plops her butt onto the back seat, moaning with pain. I place her feet carefully under the rubber-matted floor. My not-so-happy helper enters on the opposite side after waiting for the busy traffic to clear. With great struggle, I stuff the wheelchair in the Crown Victoria's tight trunk, barely able to shut the top. Seated back in my cushioned driver's seat, out of breath and wet from sleet hail slush, the younger woman trumpets through the plexiglass partition window. Senna Boulevard and 48th Avenue. Off we go. Reluctantly, I'm ready to navigate these out-of-sorts passengers over the newly named Ed Koch Bridge. Like a tortoise, the worn Ford maneuvers slowly down the slippery street, weaving past buses and double-parked SUVs. With the meter activated, taxi TV blares from the rear of the cab with Al Roker jabbering a weather update. Frustration revisits me as I inwardly bitch about this unlucky trip. Horns honk all around me. Road rage by pissed-off commuters longing to get home to the suburbs. I breathe deeply and remember that I'm doing a good deed by helping these poor women out of the freezing wind. Darkness has arrived, and I see nothing but brake lights ahead through my foggy windshield, beaten by manic wipers. Inch by inch, with tires married to the asphalt, we cascade onto the upper ramp of the former Queensborough Bridge, my headlights glowing brightly through snowflakes surrounding us on this steel behemoth. Behind my head, a fight ensues, a family feud. Mother Sunshine cries out, "Who's paying?"
paying for all these damn doctor bills?
With grit and underlying resentment, the nasal voice seated next to her exclaims, "Ma, I told you a million times. Medicare, Medicare, Medicare!" We are finally welcomed by the glimmering billboards surrounding Queens Plaza as we sharply turn onto Jackson Avenue toward Hunter's Point. Arriving at one of those ugly new condos in Long Island City bordering the East River, I slip into a circular driveway. With numbed legs, I slowly exit and retrieve the wheelchair, supporting the invalid out of the taxi with tender care, hoping she won't break her weakened hips. Her patient child hands me lovely cash, including a nice tip for the ride. I help stone-faced mama back into her steel stroller. I then whisper to her kin, "You're a very good daughter. Do you have any help?" She quips, "I got two good-for-nothing brothers that don't do sh-." Heading back to the Enchanted Island, I give myself a pat on the back, reflecting about my act of charity. It was my Mother Teresa moment. I've become an ambulance of mercy. Quickly, without kidding myself, I return to reality. Mother Teresa helped out of love. I did it for a buck and for fear of being reported to the TLC. Surprisingly, I find myself feeling compassionate for the two brothers rather than the devoted daughter. I ponder how taxi driving brings out the worst in me while scouting for my next fare. Thank you.
That was New York taxi poet Davidson Garrett reading his piece, Just Another Shift, at the Penn World Voices Festival. Yep, we took a little change of pace and brought out some poetry. This is the Taxi Link right here. You can hear it right here, 7 to 8 p.m. We go a little over when we can at WUST, 1120 a.m. And I want to let folks know at 8:30 p.m., the phone conference, the Small Business Association of D.C. Taxi Cab Drivers, which sponsors this show as a phone conference in Amharic. And you can tune into that by dialing 712-432-3100, entering the code 140465. This show is paid for by the Small Business Association. Tony and I are volunteers. And so if you can become the Small Business Association has to pay for it. So if it's membership, and it's the organizations that can fight for the drivers. I look forward to seeing drivers Wednesday at the public hearing on the taxi colors at 10 a.m. at 441 4th Street Northwest. And this show will be archived tomorrow afternoon at thefightback.org. And all the past shows, all the past The Taxi Links, you can find at thefightback.org. So go there, spread the word. The Taxi Link is produced by Will Martin and engineered by Mark Taylor. For Tony Norman, I'm Pete Tucker. Catch us next week, 7 to 8 p.m., right here on WST 1120 a.m. and at thefightback.org.